In the Bhagavad Gita, we're in the first chapter, we're on the eighth verse, translations and purports by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Om Jnana Trimarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitanyena Taishmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadatmayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurau Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tham Sajivam Shahadvaitam Shabhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakham Vitam Scha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagapate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Gade Vrindavanishvari Vishuvana Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchaka Patrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we'll read the Sanskrit, chapter 1, text 8. I'm very, very happy to be able to give this class because the Mahabharata is one of my favorite books in Krishna consciousness for relaxed reading. The Bhagavad Gita is only one chapter in the Mahabharata, which is an extensive history of the Pandava and the Kuru dynasty, and of course the famous Kurukshetra war. And so the Bhagavad Gita sits like a hidden jewel inside the Mahabharata. And the Mahabharata is said by the scholars, or by the devotee scholars, is a book that was written for sudras, women, dwijubandhus. It's a book that was written by Vyasadeva, and to give the Vedic knowledge in an easily digestible form, in story form, for people to be able to grasp. So when I first joined the Hare Krishna movement back in 1979 in the 55th temple in New York City, I was immediately placed in a group of book distributors and money collectors for the temple, Sankirtan devotee. I was a Sankirtan devotee. And that's where I began to read the Mahabharata, and it was a great joy among the aspiring brahmacharis of those days, especially to read the battle scenes, and it drew me in immediately. So here in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we are hearing in this particular verse, we're just hearing a list of names. And I'm going to speak some stories about these names, particularly about Bhishma, Dronacharya, and Kripa. I don't know how much time I have, because there's lots of stories. And we'll hear something about these personalities who are lined up for battle, the battle of the day of Lord Brahma. Day of Lord Brahma lasts for 4,320,000,000 years. Lord Krishna, he appears always in the seventh Manvatar, the 28th yuga cycle of that Manvatar. And so this is the, sometimes we hear the battle of the century or the battle of the war. This was the battle of the war. So this is the battle of the day of Lord Brahma. So we'll hear a little bit of the about the people who are on the side, who are worthy enough and pious enough and quite frankly sometimes demoniac enough to be admitted into this battle of Kurukshetra, where the Lord himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is actually playing on the battlefield. So for him it's Leela, for us it's serious business. But anyway, the point is it's these personalities are not ordinary personalities, and their inclusion and their inclusion in this great battle is enough to prove that. So the verse goes, Bhavan Bhishmas Cha Karnas Cha Kripas. We'll just read it. I don't think, okay, that's fine, everybody. Yeah. There's only a few people here in the room with me, for those of you who are on the internet, so. Bhavan Bhishmas Cha Karnas Cha Kripas Cha Samatim Jayaha Ashvatarma Vikarnas Cha Shoma Daptis Tataiva Cha. So the translation goes, we'll skip the word for word. It goes like this. This is Duryodhan speaking at the very beginning of the battle to his guru in the martial arts. He's speaking to Dronacharya. And he's looking among his own army and the other army, and he's noticing the most mighty warriors on each side. So he says to his guru, Dronacharya, Duryodhan says, there are personalities like you, Bhishma, Karna, Kripa, Ashvatarma, Vikarna, and the son of Somadatta called Bhurishrava, who are always victorious in battle. Purport. Duryodhan mentions the exceptional heroes in the battle, all of whom are ever victorious. Vikarna is the brother of Duryodhan. Ashvatthama is the son of Dronacharya, and Somadatti, or Bhurishrava, is the son of the king of the Balikas. Karna is the half-brother of Arjuna, as he was born of Kunti before her marriage with King Pandu. Kripacharya's twin sister married Dronacharya. Okay. So that's the end of the purport. So the person I would like to speak about first in this list of distinguished personalities is the personality known as Bhishma, and I'm going to tell some stories about him. The reason why I want to speak about Bhishma is because Bhishma is particularly pointed out as being one of the 12 Mahajans by Yamaraj in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Dharmam tu shat shat bhagavat pranitam. Yamaraj says that real religious principles is directly enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he descends as an avatar. For us, who are followers of the Vedic religion and followers of Srila Prabhupada in the Parampara system, those two personalities would be Lord Sri Krishna, and maybe even more importantly than Lord Sri Krishna would be Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So real religious principles are directly enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then, very surprising me, in this particular verse, Yamaraj gives a list of the people who cannot understand what real religion is. And the list is quite extensive. So it says, Dharmam tu shaksha bhagava pranitam navai vidur rishi napi devaha na siddha mukya asura manushyaha kim uta charana vidyadara charana dayaha. So really, real religious principles are directly enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even the greatest rishis in the topmost planetary systems, they cannot understand what are real religious principles. No, nor can the demigods, nor can the leaders of the Siddhaloka planet. What then to speak, Yamaraj says, of the asuras, the ordinary human beings, the vidyadharas, the charanas, etc., etc., so on and so forth. So even the upadevas, they cannot understand what real religion is. Never mind, even the great rishis in the topmost planetary system, even though they're fully situated in the mode of goodness, I forgot to add that little part, they cannot understand what real religious principles are. So then the question comes, so if they can't understand, we can't understand, the demigods can't understand, the upadevas can't understand, then who can understand? Who can understand what is the real religion? So therefore, the next verse is spoken by Yamaraj, and you'll see a very important name there, and that is the name of Bhishma. So Yamaraj says, Swayambhur Naradaha Shambhuhu Kumaraha Kapilo Manuhu. Then he says, Palado Janako Bhijmo Bailir Vyasakir Vayam Dvadvai Shete Vijanimo Dharmam Bhagavatam Bataha Guyam Durbodam Vishudam Yam Yatvam Ritam Ashvati. So he says, Lord Brahma, he knows what real religion is. He says, Narada Muni, Bhagavan Narada, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, Lord Kapila, the son of Devahuti, Manu, Pallad, Janaka, Bhishma. And then Bali Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami, and I myself, Lord Yamaraj, us 12, we are the ones who know what real religious principles are. The real religious principles, my dear servants, are known as Bhagavad Dharma, or surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead in love for Him. It is extremely confidential. It is beyond the three modes of material nature. And it is very difficult for ordinary human beings in ordinary human society to understand. But if one happens to understand it, then he becomes completely free from material bondage and he goes back home, back to Godhead. So we'll start with Bhishma Dev, because he happens to be one of the 12 Mahajans, and then it's interesting to hear his life history. So to understand the history of the life of Lord Bhishma Dev, we have to understand or talk about, firstly, the life of his parents, Ganga Dev and Shatanu, King Shatanu. The history of the life of the birth of Lord Bhishma, of the birth of Grandfather Bhishma, actually starts in the heavenly planets. There was a, to give you an idea of the atmosphere in which this birth of Bhishma Dev takes place, I read this little section from the Srimad Bhagavatam about 2 weeks in class, ago in class. But it's worth hearing one more time again. Birth of Lord of Bhishma Dev, the great Mahajan, begins in the planet, begins on top of Mount Meru in the city of Amravata, King's Indra city, on the east side of Mount Meru. And I'll give a little description of this city because it has something to do with what I want to say. Okay? So the description of this city goes as follows. King's Indra city was full of pleasing orchards and gardens, such as the Nandana garden. Because of the weight of the flowers, leaves, and fruits, the branches of the eternally existing trees were bending down. The gardens were visited by pairs of chirping birds and singing bees. The entire atmosphere was celestial. Beautiful women, protected by the demigods, sported in these gardens, which had lotus ponds full of swans, cranes, chakravartas, and ducks. The city was surrounded by trenches full of Ganges water, known as the Akasha Ganga, and by a high wall, which was the color of fire. Upon this wall were parapets for fighting. The doors were made of solid gold plates, and the gates were made of excellent marble. These were linked by various public roads. The entire city had been constructed by Vishwakarma. The city was full of courtyards, wide roads, assembly houses, and not less than 100 million airplanes. The crossroads were made of pearl, and there were sitting places made of diamond and coral. Everlastingly beautiful and youthful women who were dressed with clean garments glittered in that city like fires with flames. They all possessed the quality of Shama. The breezes blowing in the streets of that city bore the fragrance of the flowers falling from the hair of the women of the demigods. Apsaras passed on the streets, which were covered with the white fragrant smoke of aguru incense emanating from windows with golden filigree. The city was shaded by canopies decorated with pearls, and the domes of the palaces had flags of pearls and gold. The city always resounded with the vibration of peacocks, pigeons, and bees, and above the city flew airplanes full of beautiful women who constantly chanted auspicious songs that were very pleasing to hear. The city was filled with the sounds of mridanga, conch shells, kettle drums, flutes, and well-tuned string instruments all playing in concerts. There was constant dancing, and the Gandharvas sang. The combined beauty of Indrapuri's city defeated the beauty personified. Then is this final verse that is the reason why I'm reading this section. No one who was sinful, envious, violent towards other living entities, cunning, falsely proud, lusty or greedy, could enter into that city. The people who lived there were all devoid of these faults. So, it is in this city that the birth of Bhishma Dev begins. And the story goes as follows. That one time, there was a great assembly of sages in this city of Lord Indra. And they were assembled in the Sudharma Assembly Hall, which later on Lord Krishna stole and brought down to the Earth planet. But they were in this wonderful assembly hall, and it was such an august assembly of sages and great personalities that Lord Brahma himself came to this assembly. And in this assembly, there was one person in particular who is there. He was a great king on the Earth planet who had elevated himself by pious activities to live in the city of Lord Indra. His name was Mahavisha. This Mahavisha, by the way, is going to become, in his next life, the father of Bhishma Dev, and he is going to be born as King Shatanu. Now, the reason why this is happening, that he's going to become the father of Bhishma Dev, is a very, very interesting story. We know Yanti Deva Vrata Devam Pritin Yanti Pritri Vataha Bhutani Yanti Bhute Jai Yanti Mam Yad Yajino Pi Mam. We know that those who worship the demigods, they go to the planets of the demigods. It's not that they become demigods. They are allowed entrance into the planet of the demigods to live amongst the demigods. When their pious credits run out, they again have to return to the Earth planet. We know this cycle. It's spoken about in the Bhagavad Gita. So this Mahavisha, he was a king who had elevated himself to the heavenly planets and into the assembly house of Lord Indra by his pious activities. Now the second person who is involved in this whole drama was Ganga Devi herself. Now, Ganga Devi is one of the demigods. She's not a casual visitor to the planet of demigods. She is one of the primeval demigods himself. Now, these people are these kings who come from the Earth planet and they elevate themselves to the planet of the demigods. They may live there for 10,000 years of the demigods, or they may live there for a long, long time. But they're not like considered permanent residents. Lord Indra is considered a permanent resident. In truth, he's not really even a permanent resident, but he lives there for a long time. He lives there for 71 yuga cycles, or in an entire reign of Lord of one Manu. There are 14 Manus in one day of Lord Brahma. So these other personalities who are living amongst the demigods, there's a class distinction. That's what I'm trying to say. In the demigod planets, there are a class distinction. There are people who have elevated themselves to live amongst the demigods. There are the demigods themselves, there are the Upadevas, and there's all kinds of stratum of people who elevated themselves to the heavenly planets. So this Mahavisha is a temporary visitor, so to speak, to the planet of the demigods. And the story goes that during this august assembly, when even Lord Brahma himself was there, somehow or other, I don't know, it's not exactly told, but Ganga Devi was present before the entire assembly. And what happened is a strong wind began to blow. And what it did is it somehow blew away the clothing of Ganga Devi, and it revealed her naked beauty. So when this happened in that assembly, every single demigod, every single person in that assembly, every single lady in that assembly, everybody, what did they do? They turned their head. So this shows you the high class position of the demigods. They didn't want to see, they didn't want to look. They turned their heads away. Refined people, refined. But this one person, Mahavisha, he didn't turn his head away. Matter of fact, he kind of leaned forward a little bit and he wanted to take a good look. And Lord Brahma immediately caught this great faux pas, this great breaking of demigod rules and regulations. And a second thing happened when this happened is that Ganga Devi, it was registered somehow or other, it was registered by Lord Brahma, that Ganga Devi did not mind or did not find it unctuous that she was being stared at by this particular hero in the assembly of Lord Indra. Actually, Mahavisha, she actually did not mind that she was being, how do we say, oogled by this particular person. So Lord Brahma also caught this. And so Lord Brahma immediately got very angry. And he immediately cursed Mahavisha. And when you do something really, really bad in the assembly of demigods, the standard curses is go down to the earth planet and take birth from the womb of a earthly mother. And that's the curse. So that is the curse that was given by Lord Brahma to Mahavisha. So when these curses are given, it's often the practice among the demigods that they give some leeway. So immediately Mahavisha, he begged Lord Brahma, he fell on his face, he begged Lord Brahma, please, I want to take birth in the Kuru dynasty from the Pradipa, the great-great-grandfather of the Pandavas. So this boon was given to him. So there was a curse and a boon. Okay, you can take birth in the Kuru dynasty. Now, as far as Ganga goes, it's very hard to speak about this because Ganga is such an exalted demigod, demigoddess, and so pure. It's not that Lord Brahma actually cursed her. He didn't curse her, you go take birth now down on the earth planet or anything like that. But he told her a very interesting thing. He said, you know, because he noticed that that Ganga Devi did not mind when she was being looked at in her naked beauty. So what did Lord Brahma say to her? He said, you must immediately marry the man. You must marry this particular person. And so she wasn't cursed to go down and take birth on the earth planet, but she was cursed in a certain way that you have to marry a ordinary mortal on the earth planet. That was Ganga Devi's punishment, you can say, or the instructions of Lord Brahma. So we can see how different the society is of the demigods is from the modern human society. As soon as there was some lust or some intimate relationship detected between the man and the woman, then immediately, by higher authority, a marriage was arranged. Huh? It's not that the woman could go collect welfare, or the good woman, or Ganga Devi could say, I don't want to marry this man, he just got demoted down to the earth planet. I don't want this marriage. No, no, no. Immediately, a marriage was arranged. This is Vedic culture. For those of you on the internet. So, in the United States of America, in the olden days, we used to have a name for this. Not a very nice name, but it's not such a bad name. It's called a shotgun wedding. It's called a shotgun wedding. I see all Indians are here listening to my class, so they might not know this term. But 40 or 50 or 60 years ago, before abortion, before contraceptives on demand, before no-fault divorce, it was very common in my country, in the United States of America, if there was any contact between a man and a woman, a young boy and a young girl, and there was a pregnancy that came about from that contact, then immediately a wedding was arranged. It was called a shotgun wedding. Shotgun means that the father of the bride would stand behind the bride, and the father of the groom would stand behind the groom. Whether they liked it or not, they were getting married. This was more in more civilized times. It doesn't sound civilized to our modern ears, but believe it or not, it is more civilized. So marriages were arranged immediately in these kind of cases. Just like as soon as Lord Brahma saw that there was some lust between these two young people, marriage was arranged. So we are the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, and we should follow in this kind of footsteps. There are people here that say that no, this is old fashioned, we shouldn't do this. Some people want to set up ashrams for the ladies who are pregnant or who have young children, without even considering the fathers, without even considering marriage. But it's my opinion, and I know I'm in the minority, that what we need more and more in the ISKCON society is less ladies' ashrams like this, and we should build a marriage hall for shotgun weddings. That's what we should build. So this is what Lord Brahma did. He immediately said, you have to marry the man. So Ganga left the assembly now with the idea that she would have to marry Mahavisha, who had just been cursed to take birth on the earth planet. And as she left the assembly, she met the eight Vasus. And it just so happened, which shows that this is more Leela than anything else. But still, the Leelas of the Lord, they're instructive as well as being just Leela. So we see here that immediately upon leaving the assembly of Lord Shiva, of King Indra, and immediately after the curse, she comes upon the eight Vasus. And these eight Vasus have just been cursed as well. Actually, it's nine Vasus, and I'm not exactly sure of the number, so we'll say the eighth Vasus. It could be eight or nine Vasus. And these eight Vasus were cursed by Vasishtha Muni, one of the mental sons of Brahma, a sage that you shouldn't mess around with. And what these eight Vasus had done, they had joined in a conspiracy of all things to kill, to steal Vasishtha's Kamadhenuka, who was called Nandini. So all these Vasus, they had a little bit of a hand in this attempt to steal the cow of Vasishtha Muni. But there was one Vasus in particular who had a very simple name. His name is Dyau, D-Y-A-U. And he was the ringleader of this attempt to steal Vasishtha Muni's Kamadhenu cow. And he particularly was goaded on by his wife to steal the cow. So under his influence, he tried to steal this cow, and he was the ringleader, the gang leader, the head gunda, in this attempt to steal Vasishtha Muni's Kamadhenu cow. So Vasishtha Muni, when he caught these Vasus trying to do this horrible act, he immediately cursed them. And what is the standard curse of the demigods when they want to curse somebody? Immediately go down to the earth planet and take birth from the womb of an earthly woman. That's the curse. So they were cursed like that. But the ringleader of the whole attempted thievery, Zhao, he was not about to surrender to Vasishtha in any way. But the other Vasus, they immediately fell on the ground and said, "Please, please, we beg you, please don't make us live a long life down on the earth planet. We want to be born there and have a very short life and immediately return to the heavenly planets. I know as a great sage you cannot withdraw your curse, but can you lighten it a little bit for us and give us a very, very short, short life on the earth planet?" So Vasishtha agreed to this for everyone except for Zhao. Now this Zhao, D-Y-A-U, he is later going to take birth as Bhishma Dev. Okay? So he immediately gave the eighth Vasus the blessing, "You're only going to have a very short, short life on the earth planet." And they had also asked to be born in the Kuru dynasty. He gave them that blessing. And he also gave Zhao a blessing, because sometimes when these sages curse, they also feel bad that they lost their temper, and therefore they immediately foul the curse with a blessing. You know? So this is the situation in the heavenly planets. So he even gave Zhao a blessing. He said that Zhao is going to, you will be born on the earth planet, but you will have to live a very, very, very long, long life on the earth planet. And during that life, you're going to be opulent, you're going to be celebrated, you're going to be famous, you're going to be, all the good things are going to come to you except for one thing. You're never going to know the love or the intimacy with a woman. So that was the curse of Vasishtha. So being cursed by Lord Brahma, Mahavishnu, he came down, he took birth from I think it's pronounced Pratipada. Anyway, forgive me, I forget the exact name. The great-great-grandfather of the Pandavas. And he took birth in the Kuru dynasty. And he was a wonderful Kshatriya king. And the story goes, as time would have it, as he grew up and he reached maturity, one day he was walking along the bank of the Ganga River. And he was, as young princes of the Kuru dynasty, he was practicing his martial arts skills by hunting. This was allowed for the Kshatriyas in Vedic society. They could hunt to practice their martial arts skills. So he was engaged in hunting, and he was along the bank of the Ganga River, and all of a sudden, oh, I forgot one thing, that after this curse was delivered by Vasishtha Muni, and Ganga was leaving the assembly of hall of King Indra, Lord Indra, they happened to meet, the eight Vasus, they met with Ganga Devi. And so it was arranged by them that these eight Vasus would take birth from the womb of Ganga Devi in her marriage with King Shitanu. So that was arranged by them. Okay, King Shitanu didn't have a clue. So it was arranged that these eight Vasus were going to take birth from Ganga Devi. And then finally Dao was going to take, that was going to be the last one. Bhishma Devi would take birth from Ganga Devi. So Bhishma Devi was hunting on the bank of the Ganga River, and all of a sudden from out of the Ganga River comes this celestial goddess. Beautiful woman, beyond compare. I don't know if Ganga Devi toned it down when she got down on the earth planet, but Bhishma Devi had never saw a woman like this before. And he noticed she was wandering alone, something that is also very unusual in Vedic culture. A woman wandering alone without her husband, without her guardians there to protect her. So Bhishma Devi became completely head over heels, infatuated, in love with her. It was a match made in heaven, we could say. He fell head over heels, love at first sight. And he became completely infatuated with her. There was some conversation between them. And then he asked her to be his wife. And Ganga Devi spoke the following words. She said, "I will be your wife, but I have some conditions. And the conditions are that if you ever raise your voice to me and speak to me harshly over any act that I perform, I will immediately leave you." That's the condition of the marriage. They had a prenuptial agreement, we would say in modern society. A prenuptial agreement. So Bhishma Devi, looking at her, being completely infatuated, sensing her high qualities, he couldn't imagine in his mind anywhere that this particular woman would ever do anything that was disagreeable to him. He couldn't even conceive of it anywhere in his brain. So he agreed to these conditions. So lo and behold, time passed, and the first Vasus took birth from the womb of Ganga Devi in her marriage to King Shitanu. Don't ask me how the demigoddess gets pregnant. Don't ask me how the baby is born. I have no idea. But it's described in the Bhagavatam that the baby was born, and as soon as the baby appeared, without missing a heartbeat, Ganga Devi grabbed the baby from the maternity ward and began to walk straight for the Ganga River. King Shitanu's wondering, what the heck is going on? my wife, she's grabbed the baby, she's walking for the Ganga River. What the heck is going on here? This is very odd. He follows behind her. And then what does Ganga Devi do? Does anybody know what she does? Raise your hand if you know. She takes the baby and she drowns it in the river. King Shantanu is just blown away. There isn't words to describe how blown away King Shantanu is. And he's about ready to say something to Ganga Devi, but then he remembers, oh, that's right. He's very much in love with her. He's very much attached to her. If I say anything, it's all over. So he buttons up his mouth. So then the next year comes by. A baby is produced from the union of King Shantanu and Ganga Devi. And what does Ganga Devi do? She takes the baby, she walks out of the maternity ward, she walks to the Ganga River, and she immediately drowns her own baby in the Ganga River. King Shantanu doesn't have a clue what's going on. Try to understand, not a clue what's going on. Just imagine his emotion. So this goes on for seven babies. Okay? Just imagine what must have been going on in that marriage relationship. Can't even imagine what's going on between these two people. So finally, the eighth child is born. Same thing happens. This eighth child is Jao, the Vasus who was the ringleader of the stealing of the Kamudenu cow. And this eighth child is now going to, Ganga Devi heads off for the Ganga River. King Shantanu is following her. And she's about to drown the baby in the river. King Shantanu has reached the end of his rope. He's can't keep his mouth shut anymore. And he goes bananas. What the hell are you doing? And he begins to unload on Ganga Devi the 7 years of pent-up frustration. And chastises her severely. What kind of lady are you that you would do this to your own children? To my children? Sometimes what the fathers suffer at the hands of the mother. So when this was said, Ganga Devi looked at him, and she explained the whole thing to him. I'm Ganga Devi. This is what happened in the heavenly planets. She explained the whole thing to him. Gave him a little relief. And she said, this eighth child of yours, Devarata, is going to live a very, very long life. And I'm going to take him to the heavenly planets to train him under the guidance of the greatest gurus of the heavenly planets. And then when he reaches a certain age, I will bring him back to you, 12 years old. When he reaches a certain age, I will bring your child back to you and I will return him over to you. And then Ganga Devi goes into the Ganga River and disappears with the child. And that's Bhishma Dev. And then she takes the child to the heavenly planets, where he's tutored by the finest. He gets Brihaspati as his spiritual master. He gets Parashuram as his guru in the military arts. And finally, 12 years go by. Bhishma Dev is left alone in Hastinapur. Longing for the day that his child will be returned to him. And After 12 years pass, one day, Bhishma Dev is, this is the last story I will tell. I didn't get to tell so many stories about Bhishma Dev, but this is the last story I will tell because we're losing, we're out of time. I shouldn't have spent so much time in introduction, and I should have gone right to the stories about Bhishma Dev. So I made a little bit of a mistake there. So anyway, Bhishma Dev, King Shatanu is, after 12 years has passed, he's wandering again on the bank of the Ganga River, constantly looking in the Ganga River, waiting for when his child's going to be returned to him. And then all of a sudden he noticed that the powerful Ganga River that flows past his kingdom, all of a sudden it's reduced to a mere trickle. How is it that the Ganga River, all of a sudden, it just stops and it's reduced to nothing but a mere trickle of water, a small stream? And at the same time, he's feeling auspicious symptoms in his body. And he walks upriver and he sees that somebody, somehow or other, has done this incredible magical feat with a bow and arrow. He has shot so many arrows in such a way, and he has weaved them together that he has automatically, just immediately, dammed up the Ganga River. Not a 18-year or 30-year engineering project. Just by mantra and a bow, he had dammed up the Ganga River. And King Shatanu was really surprised. Who could do such a feat? Well, it turns out that the person who did this feat was a young boy about 12 years old. And it was his son, Bhishma, who's not known as Bhishma at this time. That's a whole other story that I won't be able to tell. But is known as Devarata. And Ganga Mata appears before him. And she turns over the child to the father and says, here's your son, Bhishma. He's been carefully trained. He's ready to take on the role as a emperor of the world. He's ready to be a shining star in the Kuru dynasty. He will shine like no other. He's been trained, he's been taught by the finest teacher. He'll be a shining star in the Kuru dynasty. There will never be another emperor like him, nor can there be another emperor like him. And he has his kingdom taken from his... He doesn't end up as the emperor of the world, and that's a whole nother story to be told at another time, at another place. And in another chance that I get. So this is the story of the birth of Bhishma Dev, the story of his parents, just one of the great personalities that was on the Battle of Kurukshetra, and all the other personalities that are being mentioned here in the Bhagavad Gita. They all have just as illustrious, if not such an illustrious, almost as an illustrious story behind them. It was, like I said, the battle of the day of Lord Brahma. Not the battle of the century, not the battle of the war, but the battle of the day of Lord Brahma. So these persons all have wonderful stories. I suggest that everybody open up the Mahabharata and read it with care. You will not be poorer for the effort. You can read all these stories, and they're nice stories to read to your children. They're nice stories to read to each other, to your spouse. They're nice stories to read amongst each other, and they're always uplifting and enlightening. Okay, we will stop there. If anyone has any question whatsoever, I will entertain the question. We got 3 minutes left. Okay. So we'll stop there. Hare Krishna, thank you for listening. Thank you for tolerating me. Hare Bol.